And if you want to be a part of the conversation too, then subscribe to my Patreon, www.patreon.com/MrChaz, and join the conversation. Ask your own questions.
What's my name? What's my name? What's my name?
So we've just missed some of these nuances about what was really going on 3,000 years ago. And then we just grab what we think is happening and start trying to apply it to our children today without ever understanding what was really happening back then. Because, I mean, is there a need for discipline? Yeah. Proverbs talks all kinds of ways about, yes, we need to be those that disciple and discipline our children. But that does not equate to we need to use corporal punishment on our little children.
And also, we're not living in the same judicial system, so we don't need to beat our teenagers before they get the death penalty either.
No.
Here we go. Welcome to Mr. Chaz's Leadership, Parenting, and Teaching podcast, where I introduce you to the people that can help you on your leadership, parenting, and teaching journey. Today, I have an interesting episode for y'all, and I think this is really going to be really helpful for a lot of people who have been asking for this couple to come on and talk to me. And they get brought up in conversation all the time when we have Instagram conversations through stories. And so I had to just reach out to them and bring them on the podcast to bring up this really important topic that challenges a lot of people in the community. But I'm going to let them introduce themselves, and then we'll get started with the conversation and the topic. Go ahead.
All right. Well, I'm David Erickson.
I'm Amanda Erickson, and we are the co-founders of Flourishing Homes and Families. And we're a ministry that helps Christian parents find harmony at the intersection of modern neuroscience and sound biblical theology.
And we work through social media, through online platforms. We do a bunch of different things to help parents, either individually or in groups or just on social media, and give them ideas and thoughts about what living out their faith looks like with their kids.
Yeah. So Flourishing Families is your Flourishing Homes and Families, yes. Right, is your social media. So a lot of you may be familiar. I know that because, again, their stuff is sent to me all the time, or they're tagged in conversations all the time. And these conversations are usually come up when we're talking about religion, religious practices and parenting practices and how those things intersect and connect. And so now I've brought them on to really help us kind of connect those two things and kind of understand. And they have a very, I think even if you're not a religious person, you probably have someone who's religious in your life. And sometimes it can be hard to understand different perspectives. So I think this is also a really great opportunity to hear the perspective of a couple who, you know, started off, and they're going to talk about their journey. They started off with spanking, and now they are online preaching about gentle, respectful, conscious parenting and how that connects with their faith, which is something that I know a lot of people struggle to find. So I'm going to start off by asking y'all about your journey. How did you get from, you know, just tell us how you started off and how you got to where you are now.
Right. Just to beyond Flourishing Homes and Families, I'm a theology professor. For the last 14 years, I've been teaching theology at a very conservative seminary, still teach there. And so theology, the Bible, is incredibly important to us as a family. And so matching up our actions with what we believe about God and the Bible is super important to us. And it's what drives what we do here. But there was a journey of getting from more traditional models of parenting to where we are. And really that journey started when we entered into the foster care system. We became foster parents. And we quickly discovered in trying to be foster parents that traditional parenting models don't work with kids that are brand new in your home. They are, well, we had teenagers. We started out at 10, 11, and 15 year old. That was where we started parenting, which is just a wild place to start trying to be a parent. And we did our best, and we're still in a relationship with those kids.
They're adults now.
They are all adults now. But we learned very quickly, like, some of these things that we grew up with, this just doesn't work. And that was kind of the first little thing of like, okay, maybe there's more to this than we thought. A few years later, we have biological children.
Yeah. Our oldest was 15 months old and he was squirming on the changing table. He didn't want to be changed. And I smacked his bottom to like get his attention and be like, no, you need to listen to mommy and you need to obey. And of course it shocked him because we had very, very naturally, I did not even know there was a label for it. Someone was like, I never really pegged you as an attachment parent. And I was like, I don't know what that means, but very naturally and intuitively and instinctually, we fell into attachment parenting without even knowing what it was. Mm-hmm. And so at 15 months old, I had never done anything to break his trust in me or make him not feel safe. And I just popped his leg. And of course it startled him. He cried, I cried. And I was like, whoa, I need to like find a better way to do that, to do diaper changes. Right. Well, what really convicted my spirit was like hours later, he was playing on the floor, you know, just doing his little toddler 15 month old stuff. And I got down to get close to him. And as I came down, he pulled back and pulled away from me. And he had never, ever done that before. And I instantly knew I broke his trust in me earlier. He didn't trust me to come play on the floor with him because I hit him earlier. And I texted David and I was like, hey, I spanked Ezra earlier. I don't think I'm going to be able to like use that as our main method of discipline because he doesn't trust me now. So we're going to have to find some better options. Well, like that was the start of it. And we did start finding better options, but we also kept spanking like when it was a big, a bigger offense, yeah. For maybe like 6 more months or so.
Yeah. He was about 2 years old.
Yeah.
And when he was 2 years old, I remember I spanked him and, you know, I'm holding him because that was what I thought you were supposed to do. You spank the child and then you comfort the child. I never heard the word trauma bonding. But as I was holding him, I was like thinking, I was like, you know, I wonder, like, did he do that on purpose or not? And just like thinking about that, like, wait a minute, what am I doing here? What do I really know about what's going on inside of him? I don't think I should be spanking him for this. And so I texted Amanda, like, I'm not going to spank him anymore. Like, I don't know what I'm going to do, right? I don't know what I'm going to do with the 2-year-old. But I don't think I'm going to spank him anymore. And that was like, okay, that meant we had to figure out 2 things. Number one, what are we going to do?
Yes.
you partnered with Janet Lansbury on some pretty, pretty big stuff, actually. She was really our very first introduction into toddler discipline without, you know, without pain and without punishment. And understanding their developmental process. And like, I just binged, listened to her podcast and her books because all of it made so much sense to me and was it was highly practical. Like I was like, oh, well now I know what to do. Like I don't even need to spank because I have something else in my toolbox.
Mm-hmm. But the other thing we had was, you know, a theological problem because we had always been taught that God wants you to spank. And, you know, that's in spanking's in the Bible. So if you're
that's what we've been taught.
And so if you're a Christian, we've been taught that you were supposed to spank. And we knew not all Christians did that. And we knew not all Christians spanked as much as other Christians. But we didn't really know anybody that didn't spank at all. And so that was okay, we got to do some digging into the Bible. Like we got to make sure God's okay if we don't spank our kids.
It was really eye-opening for me. I was talking with a friend of mine who lives in Australia, and I was sharing that we had decided to stop spanking and that we were afraid of getting pushback like from our Christian community. And she was like, that's so wild to me. Where I live, it's pagans and atheists who think it's okay to hit your kids. And Christians are like, no, that doesn't align with anything that Jesus teaches. Why would you be hitting your children? And I just want to say Australia is a very big country. And I know that's not true for everyone over there, right? The entire country. Like, I know that it's the same in the US. Like, it's very, spanking is very cultural. And so like, you have these little communities of where it's just the norm and nobody knows anything different. And then you get outside of that and you realize, wait a second, like, that y'all don't spank, what do you do? And you're a Christian, why do you not spank? So it was very eye-opening to just sort of get a global perspective from Christians who, you know, follow Jesus and believe the Bible and hold it highly and in very high regard, to realize like, that's not what the Bible teaches. And that was very eye-opening, and that kind of started us on a, wait a second, what does the Bible say? What does it actually say?
And that's where me being a seminary professor and having access to, you know, a huge library and all of these kinds of things, when I want to dig in on like, okay, what does the Bible say? I can go in deep. And so start looking at, you know, these verses. They're often called the rod verses. There, you know, there's four of them that talk about using a rod in most English translations, on a child. And thinking about those, okay, what's actually being said here? What did these mean back when these were written 3,000 years ago? You know, what was this about? And once I really dug in, I was like, oh, wow, there is way more here that I have never even considered. And no, this is not God saying you need to spank your kids. That's not what's happening in these verses.
So I'll stop you right there, because I want to dig a little bit deeper into that. What are... You know, so what can you kind of give us kind of what those verses are a little bit, and like what what did you find that changed your mind? Because I think a lot of people are looking for that too. I received a message just last week. It was like, I need to be able to explain this to my family. You know, I need to be able to like, okay, like I agree with this, but how do I explain it to my family? And I think maybe a theologian like yourself would be probably the perfect person to give us an explanation that would be helpful to see it in a different way than how it's traditionally been seen in some cultures, or how you used to see it.
Right. Well, there were two things that really changed it for me. One was I started digging into like, what are the actual Hebrew words here? Because these are from the book of Proverbs. It was written in Hebrews, you know, roughly 3,000 years ago. What's the actual words being used here? And start digging into the word that's translated child, and looking throughout the rest of the Hebrew scriptures and realizing like, wait a second, most of the time this is translated young man. Why is it
like every time but three? Just most of the time.
Or servant is also
servant. Yes. But, okay.
And so I was like, wait a minute. Wait, what is this word about? And looking at that word and realizing like the core root of this word is that you've become separate from your family. Like you are no longer completely dependent on your family. And it was a word normally used for what in our lingo we call teenagers. Okay. Because 3,000 years ago in ancient Israel, when you were 13, you were a man, basically. And you were expected to start working and doing all of these kinds of things. You didn't normally take a wife for a few more years. And so that period between when you're no longer a dependent child on your family and you are now a man with his own wife and family, those years, that was the word being used. And I was like, oh, okay, that's a lot different. And you even find English translations of Proverbs that use the word youth or young man in these verses. And so when it talks about, you know, if you say, you know, you should use a rod on a young man, that's different than saying use a rod on a child. Like child and youth are just completely different words in English that reflect different stages in life. So that was the first thing, was understanding, wait, we're really talking about teenagers here. We're not talking about toddlers. We're not talking about grade schoolers. The second thing was looking at like, what is a rod? Like we know a rod is used to hit something, right? But I mean, in the Hebrew scriptures, right, it was a judicial instrument. It was powerful enough to maim people. There's even specific prohibitions against using it so much that you kill someone. It's like, we're not talking about popping kids on their behind here. Mm-hmm. We're not talking about a paddle. We're talking about something really serious.
Fundamentally okay. different from
what yeah, we're it's in modern terms, it's caning, basically. Mm-hmm. That would be the modern word. And then of course, it also talks explicitly in the book of Proverbs about it's always used on the back, right? Never on the buttocks. It's always used on the back. And so walking through those kind of things and realize, like, wait a minute, what they were talking about 3,000 years ago is fundamentally different. Mm-hmm. We're talking about beating teenagers. And that's like, whoa, okay.
In the context of a judicial system, too, yes. Not in a family.
Yes. Dynamic. And that's the other thing. It's you know, in the judicial system of ancient Israel, you know, discipline starts out. There's a lot of oral discipline. There's correction. There's training. And this is all oriented. Rebukes. Mm-hmm. And of course, ultimately, it goes all the way up to and this is in the book of Deuteronomy, like you take your rebellious adult child or young man, and you say he's so disobedient, and you take him to the community, and the community stones him to death, right?
And
it goes all the way up to capital punishment.
Can I interject, though? Like, because I think even that sounds like wildly violent and can be used so arbitrarily. But when you read that in context, these are very serious offense. It is not like you have like an 18-year-old son who spent too much time out with his friends and he didn't obey you by coming in. It includes rape and incest and a rebellion against the tribal leaders. Like, it's very severe and adult offenses. It's not just like willy-nilly, we're going to go out and stone you because you didn't obey what your dad said.
Yes. Okay. Yes.
I want to make sure that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's sometimes hard to get into the frame of reference of like, what is a tribal culture like in the ancient world?
An honor shame.
So different.
Okay. So let me see if I understand this, where we're at so far. So it really kind of refers to kind of the spare the rod, spoil the child. One of the rod verses, right? Correct. And that they really refers to a teenager, if a teenager is committing a very serious felony like rape or trying to overthrow the government or something like that, it refers to capital punishment, hitting them on the back to near death or to death in those certain circumstances. And that's what those verses are really more referring to, rather than in how to raise your child in a family.
Right. Yes. These verses are talking about very significant situations. Now these verses are not all the way to capital punishment. They're the step below capital punishment. Like, this is, the Proverbs talking about, like, one of the Proverbs says, don't set your heart on your son's death, right? Because this is the next step. And so this is not light things. This is not typical teenage stuff, okay? This is very significant stuff, to the point where, like, I mean, it's kind of like Solomon in the book of Proverbs is saying, given a choice between allowing your child to continue down this terrible path that is going to wind up with him being killed, you should intervene. The tribal leader should intervene with the severity of the rod to make clear to this wayward young person, like, you are completely on the wrong path. Okay. Mm-hmm. And no, this is not how they disciplined young children in ancient Israel. Yeah. And in modern Israel too. People don't know this. The modern state of Israel does not allow corporal punishment of children. And you know, they're reading these Hebrew scriptures, they're reading them in Hebrew. There's a lot of very influential rabbis that, you know, work on legislation like that. And no, they don't read them the way American Christians tend to read them. And that was one of the things kind of like, wait a second, how have we so badly misunderstood? And of course, part of it is just we've read it in English. We don't read it in Hebrew. And so we've just missed some of these nuances about what was really going on 3,000 years ago. And then we just grab what we think is happening and start trying to apply it to our children today, without ever understanding what was really happening back then. Because, I mean, is there a need for discipline? Yeah. Proverbs talks all kinds of ways about, like, yes, we need to be those that disciple and discipline our children. But that does not equate to we need to use corporal punishment on our little children.
And also, we're not living in the same judicial system, so we don't need to beat our teenagers before they get the death penalty either.
No.
Just want to make that clear. That's not
okay.
No.
Somebody's listening and going like, wait.
Like, they're like, don't kill kids, but totally beat your teenagers. No.
Okay. No. I think I have a better understanding of what the original, the Rod verses really meant. And so you dug into this stuff and you're realizing, hey, we, especially in our American culture, have really kind of misinterpreted what these Rod verses were really saying. And so was that, then you're like, okay, like now was that the only piece of information where you're like, okay, I think God's okay with me not spanking my child? Or was there anything more? Or
One thing that was pretty significant to us was just like thinking about, you know, the teachings of Jesus and how Jesus tells us to treat other people and interact with other people, and saying, okay, but those apply to my child just as much as they apply to anybody else, and not kind of carving out an exception, like I need to treat people this way unless they're a child. Children somehow can be treated differently. And so that was a big component to me, was saying, no, these things that are, you know, part of Christian ethics and Christian relationships between people, these aren't just for adult to adult things. These are for me as a parent, parenting my child and treating my child in that way. And so that was pretty significant for me.
Yeah, that was one thing when we, you know, as we sort of moved completely away from punitive parenting, realizing that discipline and disciple are so very closely related. And for us as Christians, we have a model of how to make disciples, and we have the ultimate model in Jesus. And so with really reframing discipline from the, like he said, discipline in this interview. And I was like, ooh, some of Mr. Chaz's listeners, like they're going to hear that and be like, that we have sort of this defensive nature against the word discipline, because it has been weaponized against children, against, you know, mm-hmm. now adults who were wounded as children. And so we have sort of a reaction to it, and that's understandable. But for us, really shifting discipline to mean disciple making disciples, we can look to Jesus for that, and then the teaching of his disciples as well. And we see a lot of misbehavior and a lot of mistakes and a lot of defiance in his disciples, and really learn from Jesus how he interacted with his disciples in those moments. And that for me was really transformative, to be like, okay, discipline is not just about you can't do that and you better obey me. Like that is like the bare minimum. Like that's the lowest bar to have a child who just does whatever you say. Like Jesus' disciples loved him so deeply, they changed the world. when, you know, after his death and resurrection, and they trusted him so completely. Like, my one thing for me is at Jesus's death, Peter, you know, big, bold, strong-willed, on fire, like very impulsive personality. He cuts off the ear of a Roman soldier. He tells Jesus, there's no way I'm going to deny you. I'm in this with you till the end. And then Jesus is arrested and Peter's like, no, I don't know this guy. Like, it is and he does it three times. And it's like the biggest betrayal. And then the very next time we see Peter and Jesus together, Peter sees Jesus on the beach. He's out in a boat and he jumps out of the boat and is like running through the water to get to Jesus. So the last time they were together, he denied him and Jesus is executed by the state, right? And is killed. And Peter's like, no, I don't want any part of that. And then the very next time you see them together, he is like running back to him. And I was like, he was not afraid of being reprimanded or punished by Jesus for his betrayal in that moment. Like, he knew he could run to his teacher and be welcomed with open arms and forgiven without ever saying, I'm so sorry, please forgive me, I was wrong. He just knew he could go to him. And I was like, I want to be that as a mother. I want my kids to know they can make a mistake and come running back to me instead of going and hiding from me because they're scared they're going to get in trouble.
Would you say, and that kind of actually leaves me, and maybe you already answered, I think that you basically answered the question I'm about to ask, but maybe David can also give an example of like, how do you feel Christianity and your faith, how do you feel that that helps your parenting and your parenting decisions? I mean, we've already been having conversation about how some of the hurdles you had, you know, to overcome, and, you know, a little bit more research you had to do to kind of make sure that your parenting practices were aligned with your faith. I'd be curious to know, and, you know, how do you feel like your faith helps you parent?
Right, right. There's two things that come to mind right away. One is, and this is something I think I first heard from my good friend Jim Jackson of Connected Families. And that was, when my child is misbehaving, my number one goal is to show the fruit of the Spirit to them and to show them love, patience, goodness, gentleness, kindness, self-control. Mm-hmm. That this is, you know, as someone who's living by the Holy Spirit and trying to live out the ethics and teachings of Jesus, like, I need to do that in the midst of whatever it is my child is giving me today. Okay. And so my number one goal is not to correct my child, not to convince my child to never do that again, not even to teach them how to do it better next time. My number one goal is to do it the right way, and to do it in ways that show love and patience and self-control and those kinds of things. And so that is one thing that really helped me, like, okay, like, I have a bigger goal here than just what's happening right now. Mm-hmm. I have a bigger objective in what I'm doing. The other thing that really shifted things for me was I was reading in the Gospel of Mark, and in that gospel, there's a situation where the Jesus' disciples are arguing about who's going to be the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. And Jesus is like, hold on. And he gets a child and he says, unless you're willing to humble yourself like this little child, okay, that's how you'll be great in my kingdom. The first shall be last, the last shall be first, that kind of thing. And he uses a child as an example of that. And then he goes on to talk about how important little ones are to him, okay? And then you move forward to the next chapter, okay, of the gospel, and Jesus having this big discussion with a group of religious leaders about divorce, okay? And it's a super important discussion. And a group of kids shows up. Okay. And they come to see Jesus, and the disciples are trying to push the kids away, like, go away, Jesus has got more important things to do. Okay. And it says that Jesus got angry. Okay. And Jesus doesn't get angry in the Bible very often. And it's the only time in the Bible that it explicitly says he got angry at his own disciples. Okay. It's not just us looking at Jesus' words and being like, you know, he sounds a little mad there. No, they want us to know Jesus was mad at his disciples. Why? Because they were keeping kids from getting to him. They weren't letting kids come to him. And so like having that view of kids, like realizing like, okay, God is really, really serious about how we treat children. And so we need to not be playing around here. I need to not be flying by the seat of my pants and just hoping the right things will happen in whatever situation is going on. I need to be intentional and purposeful as a parent and, you know, prepare myself to be the kind of parent I want to be so that when negative things are happening in our family, I can show up in the way I know I'm supposed to show up. And I'm going to have to grow here. But if this matters to God, this needs to matter to me.
And there's a fundamental teaching in Christian theology that I think most, there's a lot of things that different doctrines don't agree on, but one that is pretty fundamental is that humans are created in the image of God. You know, that's stated at the very beginning. You know, when you read in context of what that meant, that was actually a really radical thing, because in that very ancient culture, only the kings, only the emperor and kings were the image of God. And so for the Bible to come in and say all of humanity is made in the image of God was actually elevating, you know, the nobodies. And so when I, and this is for both of us too, I know I'm speaking for both of us, but when we think about the image of God in our children, that to me means that they are born inherently worthy of the same dignity and respect as adults. That is not something that we earn. That's something that in their humanity and as image bearers of God, like they're worthy of that dignity and respect. And they don't unearn that because they squirm on a changing table, you know, when they're getting their diaper changed. We honor children not and give them dignity and respect and honor not because of their good behavior. Like that's conditional and complicated, you know, in so many levels of complication there. But like we honor them because they're created in the image of God and who God made them to be, and he made them people of worth and dignity. Mm-hmm. And so that was something that really transformed my own thoughts. And I know it did. David's right. Like, no, they're not worthy of less respect because they've only been on earth for 24 months. No, they're worthy of the same respect. Mm-hmm. And so do we interact differently with children than we do with adults? Of course we do. They have different comprehension skills. They have different vocabularies. Of course we're going to interact in a different way, but if it would be disrespectful to hit an adult, it is disrespectful to hit a child. And we, in age-appropriate ways, we communicate with them and we teach them and we train them. And most importantly, we model for them what we hope they are going to become someday. Like the biggest impact that we can have in correcting our children's behavior is modeling what we hope that they will learn and what we expect them to learn someday, because they're going to learn so much more from how we are interacting and modeling for them than what we're telling them to do and then doing the exact opposite.
Yes. And, you know, when both of your responses, I've two overarching themes kept on coming up. One is that of how your faith helps you parent and informs your parenting. One is that children are worthy of respect, that they're humans, that they're the image of God, and so they need to be respected. And I think that's really difficult for a lot of people to do in our culture, because we generally kind of just dismiss children and treat them like they're less than, like they're inferior. And even in, you know, I think in small and little ways, you know, you're telling the story about the disciples kind of shooing away children. I see that happen. Like that is, even if we don't consciously think about, if we don't consciously think about how we're treating children, we're going to end up treating children badly because that is the norm. Just shooing them away, dismissing them, not listening to them, not seeing them like we would someone of our age. You know, we have a hard time treating children with respect as full people. And so that's huge in itself. And the other thing is the modeling. And that's something that I constantly talk about. And even some of the, I don't remember exactly the, I think you said modeling the spirit. And I think you used, if you could repeat that, I think you said patience, love. Could you repeat?
The fruit of the spirit from Galatians 5, right?
Mm-hmm. Love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, gentleness, faithfulness, and self-control.
Yep, that's it.
Yeah, when people are like, gentle parenting isn't Christian, I want to be like, it's literally a fruit of the spirit. Gentleness is right there.
Right.
That should be the end of the discussion right there.
You know, and even what you, and you talked about discipline earlier, most of my community should be used to me using, trying to kind of normalize this term discipline. I am a conscious discipline practitioner, which is a social emotional learning program. And it's the same thing that, you know, discipline means teaching, you know, and the conscious part is really just being aware about what we're teaching. And a huge part of that is the modeling. And so what you said is like my first and foremost, the number one priority is for me to model the way that I, you know, the way that I want them to be, the characteristics and the skills, we would, in conscious discipline, we'd say the skills that I want to teach them. And the skills, you know, we talk about composure, right? Which I would say, I think that was in there of the fruit of the spirit, also assertiveness, also empathy, also choices, positive intent, consequences is in there too. And encouragement is in there too. And while we're not using a lot of the, you know, we're not using all the same words, I think a lot of the intention is aligned there. With the skills that conscious discipline is teaching and what, you know, you refer to as the fruit of the spirit. And I think that is really powerful. I do see how those things are aligned. And I do see how, you know, how those things that you're learning from the Bible, that you're learning from God, that you're practicing, very much aligns with the practices that we are still, you know, in conscious discipline and gentle parenting, conscious parenting, whatever, are trying to teach and model for children today. So I think it's
For us, you know, one of the things is like, to us, the Bible gives us like broad principles, okay? Mm-hmm. But it doesn't give you like explicit instructions on this is how you do this, all right? This is what this would look like with a 2-year-old. This is what this would look like with a 12-year-old.
Right.
Okay. And so for us, you know, we talk about the intersection of theology and neuroscience because the conscious discipline or gentle parenting is providing kind of the tactics and strategies of how you go about living these biblical principles out in your parenting, in your home, in your family. And so, yes, we know the language sometimes shifts and changes a little bit, but for us, it's all bringing the same basic ideas and bringing them to bear in more specific situations and just understanding what our child is, you know, what our child is going through at a deeper level. You know, the Bible is not a parenting manual. That's no. Not why it was written. Okay. Parenting comes up in it sometimes. Okay.
A lot of bad parenting.
Yeah. There's a lot of examples of terrible parenting in the Bible. If you want to know what to not to do. But you know, that wasn't the purpose for which that book was written. It was written to help people find God and follow God and come into a relationship with God. And then parenting is kind of working that out in our relationship with our children. Okay, what does following Jesus look like? And so from the Bible, we can get big ideas, but for the more granular ideas of like, what can I do when my four-year-old has just done this to my two-year-old, right? Right. Well, Jesus wants us to show up peaceful. Okay, I get that. How do I do that? Okay.
Yeah.
And that's where, you know, these parenting ideas and these, you know, scientifically grounded parenting ideas mm-hmm. are so super helpful in helping us know what to do and how to live out our principles. Because a lot of us as parents, like, we have these ideas like, I want to do these big principled things with my children. And then when it comes down to the day-to-day, nitty gritty in the moment, we don't know how to connect them to what is actually happening right here. And we're not perfect. We're not perfect parents. Our kids are constantly throwing new things at us, right? That's the great thing about parenting. As soon as you think you got it figured out, they're going to change.
I think, too, one thing that you said made me think of this is that the more we studied brain science and child development and attachment theory and, you know, how important trust based relationships are, the more that we realized how perfectly it aligned with how Jesus taught us to treat others, not just children, just other humans. Yeah. And I think that a lot of times Christian parents have been raised in, you know, more punitive homes, and they turned out to be really great people. You know, they turned out to be productive people. They are serving in their communities. They're often, a lot of times they're in some kind of leadership roles, and they're great parents. And they think that's because I was spanked, instead of that's because I was raised with the ethic of Jesus and what he taught. And there was a part of that, of your childhood, that didn't actually align with that. And you're not a great person because your parents hit you. Like, that's not a cause and effect thing. There's so much more to it. And we can do and raise really great humans without hitting them. And we have tools and we have the brain science now to understand why Jesus taught us to treat others the way that you want to be treated and to love one another as yourself. Like, we know why he taught that now. We have the science to back it up.
All right, I have one last question as we kind of wrap up. Again, I'm thinking about the people who don't have others in their community to go to in their religious community, in their church, that are seeing it the way that Flourishing Home and Families are seeing it now. And I guess I'm wondering, do you have any advice for those people who are searching for that, because community is such an important part of being a human and learning and growing. And it sounds like when you kind of first started, you didn't really have much. You said that you didn't know anyone who didn't, you know, you didn't know any Christians who didn't spank, right? Sure, it was different severity and, you know, for different reasons, but you didn't know anyone who didn't spank. So, like, how do you, what's your advice for those people out there like that?
Oh, I mean, our initially we had to find community online because that was the only place we could find it. We could find, like, gentle parenting Facebook groups. We could find Christian gentle parenting Facebook groups. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, when we were struggling, that's where we went, because we didn't have anybody physically near us that we could go to. Mm-hmm.
I will say, though, for people who are looking for in-person community, if you can connect with a foster, the foster community in your area. I think almost all states ban spanking of foster of kids who are in the system. So they may not be non-punitive conscious parents, but they are going to be, like, kind of your first line of community of parents who are at the very minimum are not spanking. And a lot of foster parents now are getting trained in trust-based, you know, through Care and Purposes work in foster care, trust-based
relational intervention.
Yeah. And so that can be, you know, if you're trying to build in-person community, that can be a place to try and get plugged in and just be, you know, hey, could we take our kids to the park, you know, and start building that community. And in general, it is not always true. There's never any absolutes, but foster parents in general are going to be more open to just having the discussions of what's working for you as a parent. Like, I know you're not spanking. I see, you know, we've struggled with the exact same thing with our 2-year-old. Here's what we found has been such a peace-filled way to step into these tricky situations. And then just having those conversations that can help build, because our very first friends who like actually listened to us and what we had to say, they were foster parents and foster adoptive parents. And they like, they understood what we were saying in a way that sort of our other friends, parent friends, just didn't really get it. And that's because they're stepping into it with a trauma-informed mindset. Mm. Yeah. Yeah. And then online community as well, And then also just, you know, we are now 8 years into this journey with our own kids. And I know when you're in the thick of it with toddlers and you're the only person that, you know, I 100% understand that it feels like the magnifying glass is on you. Everybody is wanting to see how your child, like you feel like everyone wants to see how your child is going to behave, you know, and they think you should just spank them so that they do what you say. Okay. Those moments are hard, but please keep the bigger picture and realize that you are actually teaching other parents how to be with their children when you are with your child in public. And it is very hard. It takes a lot of emotional resiliency. It takes a very tender heart and very thick skin. Okay. You can do the work because you are not only modeling for your child how to be, you are modeling for other adults. Like you're like the Mr. Rogers of your community. Okay. you're modeling for them what it looks like. And now we're 8 years in and we have a lot of friends who don't spank anymore and who are doing the best they can to move away from, you know, punitive parenting. And we just lived out our parenting in front of them. And we were willing to be judged for it. I think like we got comfortable with the discomfort of feeling judged, even if we weren't actually judged. And that will start to build you. You will attract your community because people need to be nurtured and they need to be loved. And when they see you doing that with your child, someone will get curious and that will open the door for conversations. And then that tiny community of one or two people will eventually be like a whole friend group that are on varying degrees of the journey for sure. Yeah. Okay. That's part of it. And also that was something that really helped me because I very black and white thinker, you know, obviously I was like the only way in discipline is spanking, you know? So for me, I had to really cultivate in my heart, like the way I treat my kids when they mess up or make mistakes or don't live up to my expectation or whatever it is, that curiosity and compassion and patience that I hold with them, I want to, and I aim to hold that with parents who parent differently for me, because we are all on a different journey. You know, as Christians, we believe that God is calling us and making us more like Jesus, but he's not doing it in all the same ways and at all the same times. That's not how it works. And so I want to hold that deep compassion and curiosity and love and concern and care for those who parent differently for me, because shaming my kids is not how I want them to do better. Shaming parents is not how I want them to do better either. Like if shame doesn't work for kids, we don't need to use it for adults either. And so creating space for them to parent differently. Now we did have to pull away from some of our friendships when my kids were little, because their friends were getting spanked multiple times, you know, in front of my kids. And I was like, I'm not going to expose my children to that. So we had, you know, like we had to draw boundaries and help protect children. But in general, most of the time, you know, just be willing to have respectful conversations and be willing for people to make different choices and keep modeling your conviction. And, you know, when you're modeling love and compassion, We're wired for that. People come.
And I've been sometimes, you know, you kind of think like, oh, this is all new. The older generations all spanked all their kids. They didn't.
Yeah.
And sometimes you find community with grandparents or maybe even great grandparents. They've been around the block a couple times. Okay. Mm-hmm. And they know that most of the things that young parents get all worried about, they tend to just work out. I remember very distinctly, like, sitting next to a man. He's a retired Navy man. All right. Career in the Navy. He's like, oh no, I never spanked my kids. And I was like, oh, okay. Did not expect that, you know. or having a conversation with another friend of mine. He's a great grandfather now. And he was like, you know, I raised my kids. If I had to do it all over again, I'd be a lot less hard on them. Most of that was completely unnecessary. And there's wisdom that older generation has. Now, there's still going to be some of them that are going to have very punitive mindset, but you'll find those people among the older generation that even if they spank their kids, they might be totally on board with you not spanking their grandkids, right? Yeah. Because they've maybe seen the pointlessness of it. And so you even find community in places you really don't expect to find it.
And then one more thing on that too, is that most parents are actually okay with the idea of spanking less. Like, most will be like, oh yeah, if I knew how to respond to this instead of spanking, I would totally be interested in that. Mm-hmm, and so, mm-hmm. You know, if for those who are a little, not quite as bold as Mr. Chaz, you know, like they have some reservations about being like openly anti-spanking, you know, you can just talk with your friends and be like, I used to spank my toddler for this, or I thought about spanking him for this, and this is what we've found has been, you know, has been helpful for us. And just giving them like one tool or two tools at a time, like try and, for not you, Mr. Chaz, but like for the parents who are really kind of torn, like try and shift your mindset from I want to make my friends not spank at all to I want to give my friends reasons to not have to spank. And that happens in smaller drips than just spanking, like than just like having a real blunt conversation and being like, if you spank your kids, I can't be friends with you because I can't let my kid be exposed to that. Like, that's not really going to be all that helpful. And so just giving little drips of help so that maybe next time they won't have to spank for this. And that's one less spanking that little kid is going to get.
Yeah, I 100% agree with that, because a lot of times it's because most of the time it's because like we don't really know what else to do. You know, like no one likes to spank their child. Like no one wants to, I'm not going to say no one at all, but I'd say 99.9% of parents don't want to or enjoy spanking their kid, but they don't know what else to do. And they have this fear about what's going to happen if they don't spank their kid. So I 100% agree that giving people more tools will help them not have to feel like they have to resort, because that's also too in the comment sections, that's typically the argument that's like, oh, I just, it's a last resort, it's only when I have to resort to it. And we feel like we have to resort to it because it's like, I don't really have anything else to resort to. I don't really know how else to really solve this problem or work through it in an effective way. And so, but this, I do know spanking, I grew up with it, it's easy to do. And I think very much what you said about, you know, the same thing with children. Now, children have less of a capacity than adults to, you know, change their behavior, not resort to, you know, physical aggression. Like their brains and their body, they're still learning to be able to do that. And so I 100% agree with that just really, really focusing a lot more on giving people the tools can be really effective. I will agree. I do take a hard line on just like, there's some things where it's like, hey, I think about this too with spanking. Like everyone, even if you are still spanking your child, like you're on your journey. And my thing is more about, you know, if you can just improve a little bit. if you can spank a little bit less, if you are spanking every day and now you're spanking only once or twice a week, celebrate that. If you've even made the mental decision to say, I don't want to do this anymore, or I am making the decision to try to spank less or not to spank. I think that is something to really celebrate and to honor and to like throw a party, pat yourself on the back, kiss your brain, whatever, really celebrate that, because, you know, it's not about being perfect, or it's not about like being the perfect parent or having a competition to see who can be the most gentle with their children. You know, it's just about taking those little steps to improve, to be a little bit more compassionate, a little bit more empathetic, a little bit more learning the skills of composure, learning those skills for yourself, and being able to kind of model and impart that knowledge on with your children. And you're not going to be able to break every cycle. And, you know, we've talked a lot about spanking here, but there are so many unhealthy patterns of behavior that we that are ingrained in us and that we pass on to children. And it's not about eliminating all those unhealthy patterns of behavior in one generation. We've taken so many generations it's taken so many generations to ingrain these unhealthy patterns of behavior within us. It's going to take more than one generation to heal from that, to grow from that, to evolve from that, to do better.
Mr. Chaz, I really think that that's such an antidote for fear in parenting, is recognizing that, like, I can look back, my parents spanked me. My dad was spanked with a belt and he promised he would never hit his children with a belt. Like, he broke that cycle of hitting with a belt, and his spanking was much more intentional and not off the handle and in rage. I'm not spanking my kids. I'm breaking a cycle for my kids. But you know what? My kids are going to have their own cycles that they're going to break for their children. Yeah. And when we think of it that way, that can be such an antidote to the fear of, I'm messing up my kids. Yeah. No, every generation has mistakes that the next generation is going to learn from. And that is always going to be true. Yeah. And we can, you know, confidently show up for our children the best that we can. And sometimes our best is a lot messier than it was yesterday. Yeah. And not okay. You know, we're going to learn from that. We're going to learn from those mistakes as parents, like, yeah, our kids are learning from their mistakes.
And it's such a great point of empathy to have for our own parents. When we're, you know, becoming more aware and conscious of like how to treat children, to also to be able to have a little bit of grace and empathy to the older generation who didn't have as many resources, or those Facebook community groups, or maybe even necessarily a big library to dive into, the Bible. And, you know, it's, I think of it like the iPhones. Like, you know, you might be the first iPhone, the very first iPhone, and you are taking a big leap in practicing the things that you're learning through neuroscience and practicing composure and emotional regulation and like, that's a huge leap. And especially if you're raised by a BlackBerry or a flip phone or a pager or rotary phone, right? We're all raised, like, that's a huge leap, right? But that doesn't mean, and your you being the iPhone, the first iPhone, you're gonna have software updates, or you're gonna be consistently improving, but you're not gonna be the last iPhone. They're gonna take, the next generation is gonna take what we've learned and improvements from those software updates and from just existing and modeling the first iPhone. They're going to build on that. It's going to be the second and the third and the fourth and fifth. So one day we got Google Glass or whatever the innovations are 20 generations down the line. But the point is that we're not shaming each iPhone or pager as we go along, because we're not there anymore, that we are having, we're grateful for the improvements that they were able to make. And Of course, and not in every family we've made huge. Every family's different. Not every family makes these huge leaps every generation. But I think I found that a lot of families do, and to be able to see that. And sometimes it's hard to see that, but really acknowledging that, you know, your parents weren't perfect. You're not going to be perfect. And your parenting didn't start with you and will not end with you. They're going to build and build and build and build. And that's okay. And so when you make a mistake, you mess up, or you said you weren't going to spank, but you lose it one day and you do spank. That's a moment for empathy. And that's an opportunity for learning. And to really not beat up yourself and really focus more on, okay, having empathy for yourself. Okay, what can I do better next time? You know, how can I apologize for what I did and take responsibility for, you know, my actions not aligning with my commitments or my faith, and then also make a commitment to do something better next time. Thank you guys so much for coming on.
We enjoyed it so much.
We did. Yeah. Inviting us.
Yeah. Any last words you want to say to families out there on their journey, wherever they're on their journey? One maybe last little nugget of advice that you can give before I turn off the recording.
I guess for me, it would be that when you're parenting in public or you're worried about what your friends or your church or your parents think, the only two opinions that actually matter are your child's and God's, and they both already adore you. And I would lean into that and take strength from that as you're still also uncomfortable with eyes watching you.
What's my name? What's my name? What's my